So we've been reading through Faithful Parenting. We are on the last, probably the last day of the last lesson, which is, what did Paul write about parenting? So we've looked at a few different texts already. We'll be kind of looking towards one of the last ones. I believe around page 5 in your notes handout. And are there more? I think they're in the back somewhere. Yes, right there.
Yep.
So we're getting ready to look at 1 Timothy. So if you guys have your Bibles, go ahead and open them up. 1 Timothy chapter 3. And this is one where you might not typically think of it as a parenting passage. So let's go ahead and open up 1 Timothy 3. We have a portion of it there. Verses 4 and 5. But I thought we would just read through all 7 verses there. I had a volunteer, somebody wants to read there. 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 7.
1 Timothy 3,
1 through 7. We're going to read the whole passage. Oh. Go for it, Alina. I was just thinking you could do a great job.
This saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to be an overseer, he desires a noble work. An overseer, therefore, must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, self-controlled, sensible, respectable, hospitable, able to teach. Not an excessive drinker, not a bully, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not greedy. He must manage his own household completely and have his children under control with all dignity. If anyone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of God's church? He must not be a new convert, or he might become conceited and incur the same condemnation as the devil. Furthermore, he must have a good reputation among outsiders so that he does not fall into disgrace and the devil's trap.
Very good. Thank you. So, not typically thought of as just as a parenting passage, but it does address the issue of the family, right? If you look at verses 4 and 5, that he must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? So when you look at this text, right, first of all, who's God holding accountable for the state of the family and the behavior of the children? The father, yeah. And so when we think about that term, it says manage well. If you want to get some other verses to give you some context for that word that's used to manage well, if you want to turn the page there, we have Romans 12:8. The one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads, there is this word, the one who leads with zeal, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. And you have 1 Thessalonians 5:12. We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you. And then later in the same passage, if you just look down a few verses, right, Paul's been instructing Timothy on the qualifications for elders and overseers. He also then moves to deacons, right? 1 Timothy 3 and verse 12. Let deacons each be the husband of one wife, managing. There's that same word, managing their children and their own households well. And then another from the same book, but talking about the church, let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. So all of those are usages that Paul, when Paul uses this word, he's in different ways in which, in different contexts in which he uses it. So what's the sense of what that means? What is he talking about? Back in the qualifications when he says that he must manage his own household well. There's some ways you could describe that. We could ask, all right, what does a well-managed home look like under this?
Lead.
There's leadership.
Yeah.
Okay, it means to lead. What I'm trying to do is kind of give us some context of like what what does that look like, right? What is it, what can you see? What does it look like to maybe, right, poorly managed, right? If it's not well managed, what would it look like? How can you tell?
Yeah.
I'll go back here first.
If it's not well managed, then there's no establishment of leadership.
Yeah, who's in charge?
Yeah.
And?
Kind of thing. When you have a lack of leadership, right? Someone has to make the decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think for well managed order and then not.
Yeah, yeah. So one big thing about the church and home and government is that when you have a well-managed home or church, people have a sense of order and the sense of where do they all fit in together.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have that, there's this chaos of, okay, who's making the decisions? Who's in charge?
Intentionality and passivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So intentionality, or there's initiative. Initiative, I think it's better. And then passive. Where there's no real push or guidance in any particular direction. You're kind of responding, just reactive to things. Sometimes when there's a lack of being well managed, you might have a home where you're just waiting for the next thing to happen, and then you kind of step up and lead to kind of work your way through that trial, and then you just kind of coast and float along. Yeah.
I think in well managed, there'd be problem solving, and if not, there'd be a lot of frustration.
Yeah, and I think you could say problem solving or even conflict resolution, right? There's always going to be conflict. When it's not well managed, there's probably just going to be a lot of fighting.
Mm.
A lot of arguing. Right? Strife.
Yeah. I say obligations are met, like bills are paid, assignments are turned in
mm-hmm.
on time.
Mm-hmm.
That responsibilities
really,
are met.
Yeah. I was thinking a well oiled machine. All the responsibilities. Responsibility.
Cows are milked, chores are done.
Right, right.
Eggs are finished.
Eggs, you guys have lots of,
yeah.
It sounds like an interesting home. So, and then what's that look like over here? Maybe, right?
Negligence?
Yeah. And that could be because of a variety of these things. Where it could be things don't get done because people are just passive and no one takes that responsibility. It could be because there's an unclear structure, right? Whose job is it to do this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
There's a variety.
The lawn is shaggy.
That's right.
Things are in disrepair.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just for example, there's certain jobs and tasks in our home. We have five of our kids, one's left, and second one's getting ready to leave. But there's always been this sense in which each child has a certain set of responsibilities. Everyone knows whose job it is to do this or to do that. When we clean the house, a lot of times the call is, everyone do their responsibilities, right? And they split up. And then sometimes I will be managing complaints about who's not completing their responsibility. Or one responsibility spilled onto someone else's responsibility, right? So there's a certain management where you're not only doing these tasks, but you're helping to lead and order and problem solve and resolve conflict among your kids. But they need to know how they fit into the overall plan. So that's kind of the idea. If you look at this qualification, he's saying that if someone's going to be qualified to be an elder or deacon, and I think kind of the point was that although we are not all serving in the role of elders and deacons, we all want to aspire to that kind of godly character. And this isn't really so much as a job description as the type of character someone would want to have if they were going to be in that office. And so he says it's true of elders, it's true of deacons. We all want to have this well-managed home. What do you think? Notice that he says at the end, he must manage his own household well with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. So what do you think that looks like? How could it be done? Is it possible to have a well-managed home without dignity? What's the difference? Because he adds that. Make sure you do this with all dignity. Think about it. There's a note right here, right? The word for dignity can also mean reverence, seriousness, respectfulness, holiness, moral correctness.
Who you're doing it for?
Mm-hmm. Are you thinking about the parent more or the child more?
Sorry, the parent.
Yeah, so why are they managing the household well?
Right.
Yeah.
If it's not to glorify God, then it's just for herself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you could have a well-managed household with a baby tyrant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're like scaring everybody into submission.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm. Yeah. So without that kind of protective clause with all dignity, it could allow for a lot of that, the tyrant, the angry tyrant, the power hungry, that just rules with an iron fist, right? Okay. And then there's this part here where it says, keeping his children submissive, right? Keeping his children. So there's a couple of places that we could look. Let's look at Titus 1:6. You see it right here. Titus 1:6. One who is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of wildness or rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
So is anyone familiar with kind of the debate here about what this can be taken to mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What are a couple different ways that you could take having faithful children? They must be believers, yes. So that's not the position that we would take, but many, many churches would say, right, this word for believing or faithful, right, does it mean that they're believing, saved, born again children? And that if your children are not believers, then you're disqualified from serving in that role, right? So that's what we're kind of trying to pull out and draw out, that when you read this, is that what that means? So, like, look at the rest of that verse. One who's blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of wildness or rebellion. So, if it doesn't mean that they're saved, born again believers, what could it mean that they're faithful? Yeah.
Obey you.
They respect your authority and they're obedient to you.
Yep.
Right? And we can see that because it's kind of compared with, they're not accused of being wild and rebellious, just disobeying you, doing whatever they want. They have a sense in which they're going to follow and obey and submit to your
mm-hmm.
Other thoughts on that? What we could mean by keeping, what does it look like to keep your children submissive in all dignity?
Well, I think if they're submissive, it's not a child-centered home.
Mm-hmm.
The children understand their place.
Mm-hmm.
They understand that when mom or dad give a command, they are to execute it faithfully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just they deeply respect the authority of their parents.
Yeah, I think that you can have, I would say, there's several possibilities. But, you know, Christ has given the parents the authority over the children, and, you know, when they're submissive, they are at least submissive to this level. They may not be submissive to this level directly, right?
Yeah.
And how you can tell is that, again, that the children are not that's a sinner. It may be for the children that the parents, or it may be that it's Christ, but at least it's not them that's controlling and kind of ruling over the home, right? And even if we have this, right, we talked about in the past how our ultimate goal is that they would be saved and redeemed. But that's something that we only play, we only have partial responsibility to be faithful as parents. And we have to leave a lot of that ultimately to Christ, to their salvation.
Yeah.
At what point is the father, the parents, no longer responsible for that rebellious, like, if that rebellion happens when they're 17?
Right.
When they're 18, you know,
yeah.
Will that deacon or elder be held, you know, to that standard, even though they've rebelled against the Lord?
Yeah, there's a variety of perspectives. Like, there's some churches where, if at any time, their children walk away from the faith, then they're disqualified because they've been general believers, right? I do think that's important, though, to think about the sense in which we look at this in the context, right? It's talking about the ability of the father to manage his household, all right? So one of the big key takeaways for me was, how long are they a member of the household? If they've moved out, they're working independently, and they're no longer underneath the father's guidance, whether that's at whatever age, I think especially if they marry and form their own household, there's points at which the children they're no longer children in that sense. They are adults. And so I don't think this has in a sense that a descendant idea of a children, that as long as they are your born to you, even if they're 70, they're still your children. This seems to, I think, carry the idea that they're a member of the household underneath the management and the leadership of the parents. What else? Any other thoughts about that, about what having faithful children would look like? So would a parents who have unredeemed children, would they be eligible? Would the father be eligible to be a deacon or an elder?
Submissive to the authority.
Yeah. As long as their household's managed well, they're not accused of wildness or rebellion, and they're submissive. Mm-hmm. And it's very common to have submissive, unsaved children in churches. And I think that's something that we have to protect against, just assuming that, submissive children are saved, or they are obedient to their mom and dad, and they go to church, right? So it's something that's, they are not synonymous. And so we hope and pray for their salvation, but even if you see submissive and obedient children, it doesn't necessarily, right? This morning I read about the parables of the prodigal son, right? You had the one that left, the one that stayed. Well, the one that stayed was obedient, but not necessarily had a good relationship with the father.
Yeah, and I would say there's a difference between people. If a child actually rejects the faith, like if they're a sophomore in high school and say, there's a difference between saying, I don't think I'm a believer versus I don't want to become a believer.
Yeah.
And if somebody says, I don't want to become a believer, it might be good for that person to step down and just say, my priority needs to be really focusing on him and my son.
Yeah.
But we all understand that children are born sinners, and I don't know. I think there is a difference between willful rejection versus I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
I want to be, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah. And there's a sense in which here that their leadership, things need to be going well in their management of their home in order for them to be effective and fruitful managing and leading in the church and shepherding over others. And so if there's some extreme trial at home, it may be difficult and challenging for them to continue to be serving faithfully during that time. So it kind of brings up, since we're talking about parenting, and managing, and we've talked a little bit about it, right? What skills and abilities are necessary for fulfilling this qualification? And you can kind of chime in here too, this not just to the father, but to the mother. What's necessary to have these submissive and faithful children? What do we need? What's essential? Mm-hmm. I have a list right here, but I know you guys are going to hit them.
Can I just read Titus 2?
Okay, read some of it. Yeah.
Well, it says, older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, in love, and in steadfastness. Older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, and submissive to their own husbands.
Perfect.
But the word of God may not be reviled.
I think we got one. And I do think one of the things, like, it's instructing us as a church. I thought it would be just interesting to maybe think about when you look at your peers in school or the workplace or in our culture, what are the most challenging differences then? How do we have to parent in the church differently than in the world or in our culture in order for this to really happen? Or maybe what are some ways of parenting that wouldn't be helpful to have a well-managed home?
Mm-hmm.
Independent women do whatever you want. I run the home.
Right.
And so it's very countercultural to have that. And so it's difficult to kind of push back against that and to respect your husband and be submissive to your husband so that you can raise children who are respectful and submissive to their father.
Yeah. Yeah. Our marriages are like, they are the foundation for our parenting. And we have really clear, well-defined people who've submitted to their roles. And I would say, it's great to think of the idea of submitting and also embracing, right, that role. Because both, you know, they're called as believers to submit to one another and to submit to Christ. And just sometimes people are we can be reluctant to embrace that role. We can be fearful that we're going to be inadequate or that we're going to fail in some way, that I'm not going to be a good mom or a good dad. But if we don't embrace that role, right, then again, who is going to do that job within your home? God's given your kids one mom and one dad, right? And it's our job. And so I think when one of the things I would definitely say is that it takes the confidence in Christ to embrace the fact that he's going to equip you and he's going to work in you to be the mom and the dad that these children need. And you don't need to shy away from it or be afraid of failing or doing things wrong. I think that's something that we often experience when our kids are young. Mm-hmm. We're afraid we're going to mess up and mess them up. And you are. You're going to mess up.
Yes.
You're going to mess up. What else? What's really essential, like, to be the parents in our culture? So
wisdom. I mean, we just spent a lot of time on that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the skill of knowledge. Being able to discern and know each kid differently,
mm-hmm.
and know how they need to be parented uniquely.
Yeah. I think the one thing, so Dan was saying how wisdom is important to know your kids and know how to parent them. One thing that this culture seems to embrace when I listen to other parents talk is they want the parents many times to function as like a menu waiter to their children.
Mm-hmm.
This is all the choices. And then you pick, and I'll help you bring you that. What sport do you want? What food do you want? What clothes do you want? What do you want? And I'll just help you fulfill that. It seems to be kind of the cultural spirit of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a lack of parents who will say, this is what's good for you. This is what you should eat. This is what you should wear. This is what you need to learn. And a removal of that pressure on the kids to make all those decisions. Right? So I think that's, with wisdom, there's the skill of knowing. Help me make all the decisions that need, that are important for my kids when they're young, and slowly teach them to adopt that way of thinking, that those values, until they're ready to start making those decisions. And you gradually give them decision, one decision at a time. As they show faithful and they show fruitful, they can make more and more. But you don't crush them under the weight of making all the decisions when they're going to make horrible choices. So that's really good. Yeah.
I'd say you have to have self-control and self-discipline. I mean, you will not discipline your kids consistently unless you're a consistent person.
Mm-hmm.
And consistent people have self-discipline.
Yeah. And it's very revealing if we're very inconsistent in our parenting, showing a lack of discipline for both parents. And so mothers and fathers, we have to be, it requires us to be self-controlled, self-discipline. What do you think the behavior of these kids... Question 7 here, right? What's the behavior reveal about our character? Because that kind of gets to that partly. How does the behavior, because in this passage again, it's a qualification for him to be an elder, but it's the behavior of the kid. So how, what's the link there between a child's behavior and how that, what does that reveal or not reveal about the character of the father or the mother?
Reveal the level of discipline.
Yeah. What the parent, the level of discipline, what the parent kind of allows, and what he or she has put, kind of puts up with their child.
They're almost like little mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you do, whatever you say, however you act, that's how they're going to go and act. So it's very easy to tell what kind of words you use at home and what you say and how you act, because that's what your children replicate to other people.
Yeah. And they're much better at replicating the negative things. So all of your flaws, those will stick really easily to your kids. So you get to see that fun little mirror. Right? And I think like there's a lot of truth to what Dave said. A lot of times you might see flaws in your own character if they're just consistently seeing them in your own kids. And so there's a sense in which you start with yourself, and then you parent your kids and work on their character. Yeah.
I think you can also tell if are the kids terrified of their parents, or do they revere their parents?
Mm-hmm.
Look up to them, admire them.
Yeah.
Want their approval. Not because it's, you know, it's not that the parent is weaponizing approval. If you love me, you know, you'll earn my love if you do this. But there's a real, real earnest sense of, I love my dad, I love my mom, I really want them to be happy with me.
Yeah. That's an amazing thing. When you look at kids, you can see kids that, you know, the way they respond to, especially if there's some sort of correction, it's very very informative to about the parents. So I've had a lot of parent teacher conferences at a teacher, right? And sometimes it's interesting when the parent's there with the child, right? And the kid is not afraid to argue and blast the parent, right? And they, you can kind of see there's a lack of willingness to apply discipline. In other cases, you can see the child is just petrified. They're cowering, right? Because they are scared to death, right, of their parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but in other cases, there is a positive relationship where they're submitted to and they want to honor their parent. They believe their parents have the best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sense of fear and respect where they know if their parents tell them, this is what you need to do, that okay, I need to do that. But they believe that it's for their good. Where they don't, it's not that they're afraid that their parents are gonna harm them if they do wrong. I didn't know if that was.
Yeah. It's more like they don't want to disappoint their parents.
Yeah. Yep. They want to live up to the expectations of their parents. That's kind of one of the goals. Do you think loaded question, right? Is the qualification for church leadership fair? that their children must be submissive, faithful. It says, yeah, better be.
Doesn't matter if it's fair.
Doesn't matter if it's fair. Right? It does, I mean, it does make you think, though, that like God does expect your children to be faithful and submissive and not accused of wildness or rebellion. So there's not any, I don't see any like clauses there for unless they're strong-willed or unless this or unless that. So it can be, I think it's safe to say it can be more difficult and or less difficult depending on the child. Some children will, this will be much harder than. So, we've got some time left. Let's look at some thought questions. A lot of these kind of hit on the idea of Paul's description of the family structure, the family order, right? So, why is it, let's look at that from the children's perspective. Why do you think it's so important for children that they understand their place in the family? Why is that such an important thing for them?
It's easier for them to embrace their place if they understand what they should do and why.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have clear and strong leadership, it really makes life easier for the child because they know that they can't, rebel against the authority of their parents, and they know they have a clearly defined role. On the flip side, what's the situation of a child where there's not clear leadership or clear roles?
It's kind of like they're walking around in the dark. They don't know where they're going. So you put the light in.
They could stumble over all kinds of things and make poor decisions or not know when they're, oh, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that. Yeah. So they're not.
They have a place whether they understand it or not. So it's easier for them to be taught what their place is.
Right. Blindly discover. Yeah. It really helps them orient themselves to the world when they can understand their place in the home.
Yeah, it's a training ground for the rest of life.
Yeah.
And if they don't understand submission in home, they're not going to understand submission to governmental figures, or they're going to make justifications for breaking laws and no respect for others.
I would say too that like almost everything that you're wanting to teach your children can be adapted to the various stages of their life. So even when they're babies, there's things that you can do to make decisions, and as they're 1 year old and 2 years old, to decide how are they going to understand what their role is and what our role is and what God's role is. So that's something where a lot of the specifics, it's great to have other parents to talk to that have older kids. And how did you do this? How did you handle sleeping and eating and playtime and all those daily specifics that you need to work through? And anything that you guys can remember that we talked about, like what's important, we're helping them to understand their place. But we've been warned not to exasperate or to provoke them to wrath. What are some things that we can do to really help them?
Consistency. If you're asking them to obey in one area, but then you're not enforcing that the next time,
right?
You're provoking them because they don't know.
It's confusing.
What their expectations are.
That's right. It's very confusing. Even with siblings as well. Wait a second. I just did that. They just did that. So consistency is a big one.
Only give them what they can handle. So like don't expect them to do things they can't do, or pile on a bunch of things that are impossible for them to do successfully.
Yeah. And there's a lot of wisdom there and a lot of having to know your kids and ages, and that may change as you have your second, third, and fourth, but I think we can provoke them by both giving them something that they can't handle because they just fail at it. They can't do it. Or we don't entrust them or give them responsibility in an area where they can handle it. And we kind of can treat them as infants as they get older. So appropriately adding those responsibilities and those choices at the right time can really help.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, I think this is the one that has the appendix at the end, right? Ways we exasperate. So if you're not sure, right, keep that around, right? Those are good tips as to what to avoid. And a lot of them, we kind of put in the notes some things to put on in the place of that. So instead of doing this, this is something that we can do. Maybe you guys can speak to this if you've grown up in a home that's well managed. How are children blessed when they're under the rule or the leadership of their parents? It's good to kind of remember as we're finishing up parenting, what are all the ways that our kids are blessed? A lot of times you can see it really clearly when in contrast, you look at a poorly managed home and a well-managed home.
There's more joy, less anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Kids have more joy, just less overall less anxiety.
Safe.
It's safe, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're safe. Poorly managed, there are all kinds of physical risks,
yeah.
Sometimes financial risks, there are all kinds of risks.
Their parents when they need help or tell them things or
mm-hmm.
you know be like, hey, I just ran out of toilet paper, can I come steal some? And parents are like, sure, speaking from experience.
Yeah. yeah, they have a good relationship that they can grow into and learn more from their parents for sure. I would say one that I've seen again just in the church and in family and in school that it's sometimes exactly the opposite, that the children who are spoiled the most and given the most of what they want are the most miserable.
Hmm.
And the children who have almost all of the important decisions made for them by their parents are sometimes the happiest because they have the ability to be a child in a safe home where they know and they're confident mom and dad know what's best. They know that I need this. Right, they get to bed in time, they get a full night's sleep, they're eating healthy food, all those kind of things are combined together. So there's that opposite of how a child is not meant to make all their decisions, right? And they're really just happier overall.
Yeah. Well, on the back side of it, when kids are all adults and they've grown up in a home that was well managed, like Christmas and Thanksgiving gatherings is a joy.
Mm-hmm.
There's just that overflows into a respect for one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also when they're adults, they don't have to learn how to do it from scratch. Like, these things are already natural for them. Like, they know how to
mm-hmm.
run home well, and
mm-hmm.
they know what they should do because they've had that example growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what Chris said, if they don't learn these things at home, and if they're going to ever learn them, sometimes it's difficult to learn them at school or learn them on the job, right? You get fired, and why did I get fired? Well, you always came in late.
And
okay.
They might learn them.
They
so
might,
yeah.
right? You just make it a lot
just,
harder for
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so our kids are really blessed. I've made the observation that there's a very strong correlation in our students who are in our honors classes that they come from very well-managed homes, for the most part, not 100% of the time.
Mm.
But there's a sense in which all the other obstacles for their life are kind of cleared out, and they're left to be to learn as much as they possibly can, right? And so I have some students who could very well function in an honors class because they have, God's blessed them with a lot of abilities and a great understanding of those particular topics. But they have all these mismanaged aspects of their life that interfere with their success. And so I could kind of see that sometimes transferring into the workforce and relationships. I think one thing, what are the consequences, how children are blessed. Parents as well, we're blessed as well. You know, when you have a child that's well-behaved, It's just a huge blessing if you go, right? And if they're not, then you're always having to, I'm sorry, and you're apologizing,
mm-hmm.
and you're dealing with them in the midst of out in public. So
a foolish son is a grief to his mother.
That's right. That's right. We talked a little bit, any consequences, additional, when the kids don't know their place, right? What are the, kind of like, these are like the caution lights, like don't let this happen, right? These are the, what's gonna happen to kids when they grow up not knowing their place?
Nobody likes a brat.
That's true.
Whether they're kids or adults, nobody likes a brat. Brats love themselves.
Right.
But it's really, really off-putting, and you kind of wonder, why doesn't grandma and grandpa want to spend time with my children?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's true. Yeah, they, no matter where it is, extended family,
mm-hmm.
the church, the classroom, the sports team, right, clubs, whatever, they're going to exhibit that same behavior, right, wherever they go. So if they're the center and they're used to always getting what they want and everyone's kind of just giving them to their desires, they're going to expect that everywhere
mm-hmm.
they go. And they're going to be in for somewhat of a rude awakening, right,
yeah.
when the world doesn't treat them the same way.
Yeah, there's a strong sense of entitlement. That was something that, just like from a coaching perspective, you talked about
mm-hmm.
sports. It's so detrimental to a team, but then you can take it to a society when kids are not coachable.
Mm-hmm.
They don't learn because
mm-hmm.
they already know everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they deserve everything.
Yes. Yeah. That's a tough one. It's a totally different worldview, right, that we're trying to impart with our kids. It's help them to see. And I think seeing their place in the home helps them eventually see their place in the world, in the workplace, and in the church. And it creates a good situation. So let's say, we've talked about, like, this is the bad example, and this is the good example. What would you do, or what would you advise? Let's say that you are talking with parents, and their kids are various ages, maybe 2, 5, 10, who knows, teenager, and they have not been in a well-managed home, right? And they don't know their place, but the parents are seeking to follow this guidance. What would be some, like, key things that you would instruct them? How would you tell them to start? Like, how can you help them to change from not knowing their place to knowing it? Because a lot of times, and this is, no matter where you're at, you know, that learning is a process. It's not like you learn everything before you're a parent. Okay, I've got it all. There's going to be times where you're going to learn. So what would be some advice that you could give to parents if you have, maybe they've come into the church, they've just become believers, or they've been believers, but they've not really given thought to have a parent until kind of things have gotten poorly managed? So I like that you brought up Shepherding a Child's Heart. So
mm-hmm.
parenting books, there's some really good parenting books that you can read. That's one that I've given out as a gift. So in Chris's family, she's the oldest of all the siblings. And so 1 year for Christmas, to all the dads, read this book.
Mm-hmm.
Read this book. Follow this book, right? There's the Bible, and then also his parents. So Shepherding a Child's Heart, there's many good books. We have several in our resource center, right? Don't Make Me Count to Three, or
mm-hmm.
The Duties of Parents, or Gospel Power of Parenting. There's several of them that address Age of Opportunity, that address different times, different ages. What else could you say to them to help them?
Thank you. Also, it's like from an effort point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have motivation
That'd be a hard one. That is a hard one, because we want to think about, oh, this is a problem with my kids, and what can I do to change them? Mm-hmm. But many times it's really, like you said, there's effort. And a tremendous amount of this poorly managed home is just, there's this passivity or laziness, negligence, where we just have abdicated our role. And we're not parenting, we're not being a good father or good mom. So that's a hard one, but yeah, it's going to be a lot of work. But that, I mean, it's so true. Sometimes people feel like it's just too much work to do, fill in the blank, and they don't realize how much work they're creating for themselves later on. Can you guys think of examples? So one example that you see in the scriptures of like being faithful is that for us, it's a lot of work when your kids are little, like to teach them that how to behave at a mealtime. Mm-hmm. Okay? You don't complain. You don't whine. You don't cry. Right? You give them a small serving. You eat what we give you. Right? You can ask for more. Like, there's all this training that's a lot of work that requires disciplining. But you reap so much fruit from it throughout the years that follow. Right? Are there other areas where you can think of where that you can see that work paying off in your kids, where they're really blessed by the amount of work that you put in early on? There's some other things.
Obeying authority.
That's a lot of work, right, to get them to actually believe. Mm-hmm. And some kids, it takes a little bit, and they're just, okay, right? Mm-hmm. And some kids are like, they're going to fight you tooth and nail, right? So it depends on the kid. But once that clicks, they are just so much better off in the home and everywhere they go.
Whether it's homeschool or public school, I mean, teaching your children to do well, as best as they can, try mm-hmm. their best.
Yeah.
I mean, every child's different developmentally, but mm-hmm. they just try their best and respect authority, and I think that's going to go a long way in their life.
Yeah, that's a tremendous one, to like actually embrace the idea of whatever you do, do it as if you're doing it for the Lord. And you can see lots of examples of people in the workplace or in school where you think, man, you could do so much better, right, if you were giving your very best. And so embracing that, and that takes time, right, to hold them to a standard at home, say, no, that's, I know you did this, but we expect this. That you do it right away. You do all the way, everything you ask. You have a joyful heart. So developing that has a huge payoff. That's really good. Well, let's look at some, as we wrap up, here's some questions to just think about personally, right? So if you are a parent, these would be for you, right? What are some ways that you exasperate your children? I would encourage you to look through that. And probably talk to your spouse, because we don't always exasperate in the same way. So I remember Carissa telling me at times, there would be times where maybe the words I was saying were fine, but I would have a body language, a tone of voice that would convey, I'm really disappointed in you, right? And whatever it was with the kids. And so your spouse can often see things that you are doing that exasperate your children. So look through those, right, appendix. And then ask yourself, right, do your children respect your authority, and what does that look like? Do they obey right away? Are they fearful? Are they not, they have no fear? Do they respect your authority? And then what does your life at home demonstrate about your walk with the Lord? I think that is a key thing just to take away, is that our parenting is the training ground for the rest of life. It's the first place where our kids are going to learn how to relate to God, how to relate to authority, how to relate to a loving father. So I'm just going to read the conclusion here as we wrap up. So really, in order to be faithful Christian parents, we must push against the prevailing secular wisdom, right? Instead of being a bumbling, lovable goofball, or the cool mom who lets her kids do whatever they want, right? The scriptures require that parents assert their God-given authority to train and discipline their children. And they desperately need this training. They need it. The Bible reveals that the parent who faithfully disciplines and teaches and corrects, chastens and rewards and punishes, this is the parent who truly is loving their children. We've talked about that, how real discipline is a sign of love, and a lack of discipline is showing that they're not really loving parents and children. An ordering household doesn't come naturally, right? Does not come naturally. It begins by establishing divine authority, expanding and explaining how God's authority in turn gives the parents authority. And then through that, a nurturing and dignified love, we manage our households with understanding that we're all under God's authority. So we're not a parent-centered home or a child-centered home. We're Christ-centered. And these relationships are going to pave the way for our children to understand what it means to fear the Lord and to honor Him with their lives. So I would just, you know, if you have continuing things that come up that you've thought about through the study, there's many good books in the Resource Center. And ongoing, there's a lot of parents in the church, right? Parents that have kids the same age, a little bit older, a little bit younger, right? There's a lot of opportunity to just talk to parents. And we did that a lot, right?
And I would just say the internet is not nearly as effective as talking to parents who you know their children and you know them, and they know you and they know your children.
Yeah, that's right. They might seem to be wise, but it's a lot better to get advice from the people that you know and see within the local church.
There's a lot of bad parenting advice on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad or fad, right? Where it just comes and goes and focus on one thing over another. All right, let me pray for us as we go. Father, it is a great, great joy to just think about the gift that you've given each one of us, the gift of a family, the gift of marriage, how the marriage can be a picture of the beautiful relationship between Christ and the church, how we can learn what it looks like to lovingly lead and submit, to see that played out in such an intimate way. And we thank you for the blessing of children that you give in families, and pray that as we go that you would take the seeds that we've planted throughout these past weeks, and that they would be watered through just the study of your word, watered through conversations, watered as we observe godly parenting up close, and that they would bear fruit in the lives of everyone here, that it would help us to parent our own kids better, to counsel and come alongside those that we know who are parenting as well. And that through all of it, it would be a way in which we could honor and glorify you, picturing your great love for us to our kids, and that you'd use us as your instruments to prepare our children to know you and to love you. We pray in Christ's name. Amen.